The title of the message this morning is Raising Kids Committed to Christ. We find ourselves in Acts chapter 16. We'll be studying verses 1 through 5. As you're turning there, consider the fact that whether you realize it or not, there are many things that children have taught adults. Kids have taught us many things. For example, they've taught us about ceiling fans. That's right. It's through kids that we've learned that if you hook a dog leash over a ceiling fan, the motor is not strong enough to rotate a 42-pound boy wearing a Batman cape. Kids have taught us about cars. They've taught us that marbles in gas tanks make a lot of noise when you drive. Kids have taught us about water. It's through kids that we've learned that a king-size waterbed holds enough water to fill a 2,000-square-foot house 4 inches deep. Kids have taught us about fire. They've proven that a magnifying glass can start a fire even on an overcast day. Kids have taught us about cats. It's through kids that we've learned that cats throw up twice their body weight when placed into a dryer. Kids have also taught us about sound. We've discovered that 4-year-old's voice is louder than 200 adults in a crowded restaurant. We've learned a lot from kids. And while kids have taught us so much, it's truly our responsibility that we teach kids the lessons that they need for experiencing a good life in this lifetime, and the lifetime to come in heaven. This is why we spend 18 years teaching kids all sorts of things. We teach them how to walk and we teach them how to swim. We teach them how to play games and play sports. We teach them the 3 R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, which when they discover how to read, discover that it's not really 3 R's at all, but an R, a W, and an A. We teach them so much, and yet we so often fail to teach them the most important lesson in life. Simply put, we fail to teach them the importance of being committed to Christ. Oh, we tell them about being committed to Christ. But I think we fail to teach them about being committed to Christ. There is a difference between telling somebody something and teaching somebody something. Do we really teach our kids about being committed to Christ? I'm not so sure we do. How do I know this? Well, recent research would reveal that the majority of church-going teenagers tend to cease their church attendance within a few years after leaving home. A 2004 study released by the Higher Education Research Institute at UCLA examined church attendance by college students. UCLA researchers found that in 2000, just over 80% of college freshmen said that they had attended church services frequently or occasionally during their last years in high school. From there, entering into their freshman year at college, 52% dropped out of church attendance. And by 2003, those freshmen who were becoming juniors, only 29% could make that same claim. So between their last year of high school and their junior year of college, 2/3 of the kids had dropped out of church attendance. 2 out of 3. Well, hopefully, your kid will be one of the 1 in 3 who continues church attendance. But the purpose of this study is to make sure they are. And not only to make sure that your kid is one of the 1 in 3, but that at Calvary South Austin, 3 of 3 will continue to be committed to Christ through His church. What can we do as a church to ensure our kids will be committed to the cause of Christ? What can we do as parents? What can we do as grandparents? What can we do as friends and family to ensure that our kids aren't merely hearing about Christ, but becoming committed to Him? Well, there are four things that we must instill in our children if they're going to take their Christian faith seriously. Number one, we must raise our kids to be knowledgeable. The second thing that we must do is raise our kids to be charitable. Third, we'll look at the need to raise our kids to be dependable. And then finally, we need to raise our kids to be teachable. Now, let me give you a presupposition for this study. I'm presupposing that we're dealing with kids who are already Christians. There is a great need to lead our kids to a saving relationship with Jesus Christ. We need to lead them to making a personal decision, asking the Lord Jesus to come into their hearts, forgiving them of their sins. That's the first thing that kids need, is a relationship with Christ. Presupposing that that has already happened, we must move on from there now to teach our kids to be knowledgeable, charitable, dependable, and teachable. And so with that in mind, let's begin with that first point, teaching our kids to be knowledgeable. We find ourselves in Acts chapter 16, beginning in verse 1, where we find Paul and Silas. They came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. Timothy here is the person that we meet in our text first. We're introduced to this teenager named Timothy. Chances are Timothy was around 18 years old. Later, Paul would write to young Timothy, who becomes his protege. In 1 Timothy 4:12, Paul announces Timothy's youth when he says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example." Paul was saying, you're not off the hook of being a good example just because you're a youth. You're a youth, but be a good example. Paul was encouraging Timothy to be an example. But without a doubt, when we meet him in the text here this morning, in Acts chapter 16, he already is a good example. Paul is merely telling him to continue to be a good example. Timothy already was an example, simply because Timothy was a disciple. Look at Acts 16:1 again. "Then he came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there, named Timothy." Paul already considered Timothy, young Timothy, the teenager, to be a disciple. Disciple means pupil or learner. And the Greek root word for disciple is mantheno. Mantheno means to increase in one's knowledge, to gain knowledge, or to be increased in knowledge, to be knowledgeable. Timothy was considered to be a disciple because Timothy was increasing in knowledge. He was 18 years old and he was learning the word. He knew the word. But how is it that such a young man, this teenager, Timothy, how is it that he knew the word? How is it that he was considered a disciple at such a young age? Mainly because of two people. Let's talk about the first person, his mother. Timothy's mother, we find here in Acts chapter 16, verse 1. Her name is Eunice. And in Acts 16, 1, it says, "Then he came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed." We also learn about his father. It says his father was Greek, but that's all it says. Timothy's mother was a believer, but his father was not. And so, at least Timothy is living in a home with parents that have two different religious beliefs. It's also possible that Timothy's father wasn't around. It might have been that he might have been dead, or maybe he was just not in the house very often. Maybe he was off at Greek centers doing things that would be Greek to us. But either way, it would appear that mom is the one parent who's raising Timothy. But she's raising him to be knowledgeable of God's word. I can't help but think of the testimony of K.P. Yohanan. I'm reminded of K.P. Yohanan's mother. K.P. was born in a remote village of South India. And because of his mother's influence, K.P. grew up with a knowledge of God. At the age of 8, K.P. gave his heart to Jesus Christ. And while he was still a young boy, his mother began fasting each week, praying that God would call one of her 6 sons into full-time missions. Well, one by one, to the disappointment of KP's mother, the 5 oldest boys chose secular professions. She had given up hope because KP was such a scrawny, kind of a weak young man. But in 1996, her prayers were answered. Her son KP came to his mother and said, "Mom, I want to go to North India to work with this missions organization called Operation Mobilization." Her heart swelled with joy as her prayers for years had been answered. Her son KP entered into full-time ministry. And years later, KP began a ministry called Gospel for Asia. Gospel for Asia was formed and has led thousands and thousands of Indians to saving faith in Jesus Christ. Today, his organization out of Dallas, Texas, is making an impact on all the world. It's incredible that the impartation of knowledge about God from KP's mother to KP and her prayers and fasting for one of her sons to be dedicated to the work of the Lord resulted in one of the most dynamic and influential missionaries in the world today. This is the kind of impact that parents can have when they impart the knowledge of Christ to their children at a young age. Well, back to Timothy. Timothy's mother was a Jewish woman, and she was raising Timothy to know the God of the Old Testament. She was raising Timothy as a Jew, even though the father was a Greek. But then, on Paul's first missionary journey, Timothy's grandmother got saved. That's right, Christian grandparents play an important role in imparting knowledge to their grandchildren. You see, in Paul's second letter to Timothy, he recalls the faith of Timothy's grandmother, Lois. 2 Timothy 1:5 says this, "When I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded is in you also." It would appear that Timothy's grandmother became a Christian during Paul's first missionary journey. It's possible, then, that his mother Eunice received Christ as a result of Lois becoming a Christian. So maybe it's possible that Paul comes through, meets Lois, Timothy's grandmother, leads Lois to Jesus. Lois turns around and leads her daughter, Eunice, to the Lord. And then maybe the both of them together fill Timothy with the knowledge of the Messiah, and he gives his life to Jesus as well. But it's because of the influence of Lois and Eunice, mother and grandmother, that Timothy was filled with the knowledge of Christ. And he became a believer too. But it wasn't just Lois. And it wasn't just Eunice who were filling Timothy with knowledge. It's obvious that Timothy was in fellowship with other believers. Look at Acts chapter 16, verse 2. It says, "He was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium." The brethren gave a good report about Timothy. They had probably served alongside of him. They had poured out their knowledge into Timothy, and they reported that, yes, Timothy is a true disciple. We must understand, then, that other believers play a role in building into the lives of youth, pouring their knowledge into the lives of the youth of the church. We must see raising knowledgeable Christian kids as a community event. It's the responsibility of the parents and the grandparents and the church all together. Raising knowledgeable kids takes time and energy. Unfortunately, It's sad to say that the extent of a Christian's childhood education, for the most part, for most kids, is 1 hour a week during church service. Most kids will get 52 hours in a year of knowledge about who Christ is and what He's come to do. Many parents actually think that Sunday school will take care of the teaching that their kids need about Christ. And I'll tell you this right now, that we've got an awesome children's ministry program here at the church. We've got directors who are putting together programs where kids are being taught through craft and through games and through all sorts of things. But no matter how good our children's ministry is, it will never be enough to fill your kids with the knowledge that they need to become committed Christians, committed to Christ and His church. 52 hours a year is not enough knowledge. If we're talking about an infinite God, how long would it take to learn about an infinite God? Eternity. Well, then we need to spend as much time as we can filling our kids' heads with the knowledge of Christ, who He is, what He's done for us, and how we can be committed to Him. We must spend our time filling our kids with knowledge of Christ. Our kids need to know how to study the Bible on their own. So you must show them. You ought to sit down with them with a Bible and a concordance and some commentaries and show them how to study the Bible. Our kids need to know how to spend time devotionally with the Lord, having that personal relationship. You ought to spend time doing devotions with them until they get to the age where they can do it on their own. Our kids need to know how to defend their faith. There are so many heresies out there, and as your kids get older and older, they're going to be faced to examine and consider those heresies. Are your kids equipped to deal with those false teachings? Or will they suffer and be slipped into those false teachings because they weren't equipped? They didn't have the knowledge to deal with it. We need to help our kids understand that our Christian worldview is defendable. Our kids need to know the importance of serving. And so we need to fill them with the knowledge, instructing them on why it's important to serve the Lord. Kids today, the knowledge that they're filled with typically is less than important. The majority of the knowledge that their head is filled with is less than important. They know all about their favorite American Idol, and they know how to text their vote in. They know all about the hidden levels of their favorite video games. They can rattle off the statistics of their favorite sports heroes. It's time that we made sure that they know things about the Lord. It's time that we make sure that their heads are also filled with knowledge of eternal things. We must spend time raising knowledgeable kids. But if you would, turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Hold your finger there in Acts 16 because we'll come back to it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1, we see something very important because it can't stop with just having kids who are knowledgeable. It's true that we need to fill our children's heads with the knowledge of spiritual and eternal things. But we must be careful not to stop with just knowledge. Paul writes to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 8:1, "Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies." Let me read it in the King James Version. "Knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth." This word charity or love, we're talking about God's agape love. This is our second word. We can't just stop with having knowledgeable Christians. We must raise our kids to be knowledgeable and charitable. Because knowledge by itself only creates prideful little kids. But knowledgeable Christian kids who are also charitable, this is a good example. Charity, well, it's a quality that should be found in the life of every true disciple. charity in the King James Version, this word charity, as we find it in the King James Version, God's agape love. Agape love, it's sacrificial love. It's a love that gives and expects nothing in return. It's a love that puts others first and ourselves last. It reminds me of a mother who was preparing pancakes for her son one Saturday morning. She was preparing pancakes for Kevin, who was 5, and Ryan, who was 3. The boys began to argue over who would get the first pancake. Their mother saw an opportunity for a moral lesson here, and she said, "If Jesus were sitting here, he would say, 'Let my brother have the first pancake. I can wait.'" Kevin turned to his younger brother and said, "Ryan, you be Jesus this time." It's true that we must teach our kids about sacrificial love. How to put other people first and why. Well, it's clear here that Timothy had been taught about God's agape love. It's clear from our text that Timothy was a charitable Christian. I'm sure that Lois and Eunice, mom and grandma, had taught him all about charity. But also Paul, who will later write 2 letters to Timothy. In both of those letters, at the beginning of the letter, Paul refers to Timothy as his son. He had taken Timothy on as a son and taught him to be a charitable Christian. Timothy was certainly taught by Paul and by Lois and by Eunice how to be a charitable Christian. Look at Acts 16, verse 3. Paul wanted to have him go on with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in that region, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. Wow. Now, didn't the church just determine that circumcision wasn't necessary? Well, yeah, they did. They had just determined that. Maybe you're wondering here this morning, well, what is circumcision? And if that's your question, then let me just direct you to ask Dave Napier after the sermon, and he'll make that abundantly clear to you. But let's just put it this way. Let's just say that Timothy really gave of himself to this cause. Timothy underwent a painful surgical procedure. But why? Why? You see, Paul wanted Timothy to continue on in this mission. Look again at Acts 16:3, where it says, Paul wanted to have him go on with him. Paul wanted Timothy to be on the missionary journey. However, Paul knew who they were going to be ministering to, both Jews and Gentiles. And the Jews in this area knew that Timothy was a half-breed. He was half Jew and half Greek, and he was uncircumcised. Paul knew that if Timothy was going to actually make an impact on the lives of the Jews who were unbelieving, he would need to be circumcised. This was going to be a huge stumbling block for the unbelieving Jews in this area. If Timothy was not circumcised, he wouldn't be able to minister on this journey. Well, this was no question of salvation for Timothy. This was not, "Timothy, you need to get circumcised and then you can be saved." No, it was, "Timothy, if you want to go on this trip, if you want to see the Jewish brethren you have around you become a Christian, well, there's a stumbling block here. You need to get circumcised." And Timothy said, "No problem. No problem. I will gladly go through this painful ordeal so that I can minister to these people." He gave of himself. That's charity. He loved others so much that he was willing to suffer and undergo this painful surgical procedure. Paul would later challenge Timothy to continue to set an example of charity. 1 Timothy 4:12 says, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in word, in knowledge, in conduct, and in charity." be an example in love. Well, like Paul, we must challenge our children to be charitable. Our children must be taught to give of themselves. Maybe not in the same way that Timothy was here, but certainly in other ways. We must teach our kids to give of themselves, to put Christ first, and to put others second. But this won't happen just because we throw slogans at them like, well, it's better to give than to receive. That is not enough to equip your kids to become charitable. No, we must model charity with our lives. They need to see an example of charity in the way we live. And then we must look for opportunities to lead our children into acts of charity. I remember when I was in the fifth grade, I had a friend whose parents were basically penniless. They couldn't afford hardly anything. My family, well, we weren't that well off either, but we had enough. A friend of mine wanted to play Pop Warner football, and so did I. We could afford the pads, but my friend's family couldn't. And when my mom found out, she got the money together and took me and my friend down, got us fitted for pads, and we were both able to play. Now, this is a memory that's been etched into my head since the fifth grade. This act of charity on the part of my mother, well, I've always thought about that. I've always considered that when dealing with people that are less fortunate. She would say all kinds of things. She was a Christian mother. She taught me with her words all sorts of things, most of which I don't recall what they were. But this act of charity has been etched into my mind my whole life since the fifth grade. I've never forgotten this example. And if we're going to raise charitable children, we need to show them charity. We need to set the example. Well, we must help our kids to become knowledgeable if we're going to raise kids committed to Christ. We also must raise our kids to become charitable if they're going to be kids who are committed to Christ. But they also need to become dependable. Dependable. This is a person who is trustworthy. A dependable person, well, others can have complete confidence in them. They're reliable. Unfortunately, today, teenagers are largely undependable. In an article titled "Hiring Teenage Wasteland," Jennifer Saba reported, "No generation of teens has escaped criticism from the nation's employers. But even those who study teenagers for a living say that this current crop is in a class all to itself." One restaurant owner complained, "They're spoiled, lazy, and undependable." Undependable. Some would suggest that this is what it means to be a teenager. Just let kids be kids. Scores of Viking children would disagree. By the age of 5, Viking children were expected to work to support the homestead. And so Viking children at 5 years old were on the farm doing manual labor and being depended on for that. By the age of 10, Viking children were considered adults. Possibly moving out of the house, working some job, maybe getting married. While this is a bit extreme, I realize, I'm certainly not suggesting that we need to raise Viking children here. The point that I'm making is this, though. 5-year-old children have proven in the past that they can be dependable. 10-year-old children in the past have proven that they can make adult decisions. But here in America, we just baby them and nurture them, and oh, they can't be depended on because they're just kids. It's time for that to stop. We must raise kids who are dependable. I certainly don't suggest that we throw our 5-year-olds or our 10-year-olds into sweatshops and get them working. Don't kick your 5- or 10-year-old kid out on the streets when he's 10 and say, yeah, you're on your own now. Let them stay with you at least until they're 12. I believe that kids will rise to the occasion. By way of knowledge, I believe that kids can learn as much as they want to learn. We don't have to limit what they learn. By way of charity, I believe that kids want to love and want to actually sacrifice themselves for others. Dependability, I believe that as dependable as you expect them to be is as dependable as they want to become. Doesn't mean that they're always going to be perfect, but neither are we. If you challenge your child to become dependable, they probably will. If you don't challenge them to become dependable, they're just going to form a habit of undependability. And then the habits of adolescence become the habits of teenagers. And the habits of teenagers become the habits of adults. It's not like undependable children who are not taught to become dependable will automatically become dependable teenagers. And if they don't become dependable teenagers, then what's going to be the switch that's flipped to make them dependable adults? No, if you don't raise dependable children, then they eventually become undependable adults. And undependable adults move back in with mom and dad. Or they leech off the government for the rest of their life. No, it's our role. As parents, as grandparents, as the church, we need to be raising dependable children. Though Timothy was just a teenager here, he was dependable. No doubt that Eunice and Lois challenged him in this area. But Paul also became a father figure to Timothy and challenged him at a young age to be dependable. One way was by taking young Timothy on a cross-country mission trip. And we see the beginnings of this here in Acts chapter 16, verse 4. In Acts 16, verse 4, it says, "And as they went through the cities, they delivered to them the decrees to keep, which were determined by the apostles and elders at Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith and increased in number daily." You see, Paul and Silas and Timothy begin in Lystra, and they begin delivering these decrees. The decree that said, no, you don't need to work the law of Moses to get saved. It only takes faith, and faith alone, in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, trusting in Him to be saved. They're taking these decrees and delivering them to all the churches that had been deceived by the Judaizers. They went from Lystra to Iconium. And from Iconium, they went to Antioch in Pisidia. And from Antioch, they traveled all the way to modern Greece. And then back down through Corinth. And then all the way back to Jerusalem by way of Ephesus and Caesarea. Well, it didn't stop there. Because Timothy was not only dependable on the first missionary journey, he took, or that second missionary journey, first for Timothy, but he took a second missionary journey, Paul's third, and was depended on all over again. Timothy, at the age of 18, maybe 19, was a world traveler and depended on by Paul and Silas and the other churches. Well, let's consider the result of one teenager who became dependable. Acts 16:5 says, "So the churches were strengthened in the faith and increased in number daily." Because one teenager became dependable, the church was strengthened. We need to teach our kids to become dependable. The best way to do this, I would suggest, is to model dependability. As parents, as grandparents, as friends and family in the church community, we ought not make promises that we know we're not going to be able to keep. We need to be dependable. When we say we're going to do this, we need to do our best to do it right. And if we don't do it right, we need to go to our kids and say, you know what, mommy, daddy, grandma, grandpa, friend, family, we meant to do this. We tried to do this. It didn't work out. We're sorry. We want to be dependable, though. We got to let kids know we're sorry when we're not, you know, true to what we said we would do. We ought not say one thing and then mean another to our kids. And we certainly don't need to give them, do as I say, not as I do. Because that just shows that we don't really believe in what we're telling them if we act in ways that are contrary to what we're telling them to be. But most of all, we need to consider this. If your child lacks dependability, you need to look inside. Because it's been said, and I believe, that fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. If your kids are living a life that where they're not depended on, or they're not dependable, how dependable are we? Because if we're modeling dependability, chances are our kids will become dependable. If our kids aren't dependable, there might be a problem with us. Are we dependable? Are we modeling dependability? Another way to teach dependability is by giving kids opportunities to be dependable. Set up a schedule when certain chores are supposed to be done. And then help them to stick to that schedule. Help them to understand why the schedule is important. I get the garbage out at my house on Sunday night. But I know why that's important. Because on Monday morning, that trash truck is rolling up my street. And if I don't get the garbage out by the time he rolls past my house, that garbage is mine until next week. I don't want that garbage. It's garbage. I want the garbage people to take the garbage and do whatever they do with it. I know why the schedule is there, and so I'm dependable to that schedule for the most part. And so help your kids to understand why a schedule is important. And then reward your kids for a job well done, or let them feel the consequences when they fail. This is what's going to happen in the real world. Why teach them that there's no consequences when there really are? Talk with them about the importance of being dependable. And if they fail, assure them. Assure them that we as adults fail too. And that it's okay to fail. But let's just get it back together and try again now. It's okay to fail as long as we try again to be dependable. Just because we fail doesn't mean we need to give up on being dependable. We just try harder again. Ultimately, we must direct our kids to walk in the Spirit. Because if it comes down to love, if it comes down, you know, charity, if it comes down to knowledge, if it comes down to dependability, listen to what Galatians 5:22 says. The fruit of the Spirit is love or charity, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness. The word faithfulness means dependable. If we want our kids to really be dependable, if we want our kids to really be charitable, we need to teach them how to walk in the Spirit. Christian kids need to learn the importance of walking in the Spirit. That's not over them. That's not beyond them. That's right up their alley. And they need that information. They need that knowledge. In order to raise up kids committed to Christ, we must give them the knowledge that they need to walk in the Spirit. And we must challenge them to walk in the Spirit, which will help them to be charitable and to be dependable. But most of all, we need to help them to continue to be teachable. Timothy was clearly teachable. This is our final point. Teachability is huge. Because the minute you think you know enough, the minute you think you know it all, you're heading for a fall. Paul modeled the need for teachability for Timothy by writing him two letters. Paul taught him on those two missionary journeys. But we'll see that during these journeys, there was going to be time that Timothy and Paul were separated. And so Paul would continue to write to Timothy, teaching him when they were separated. Paul wrote two letters to Timothy, both for the continued education of Timothy. 1 Timothy 4:13 says this, "Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine." Timothy, he's saying, don't stop learning. We must challenge our kids to keep on learning. We must encourage them. Never get to the point where you think you know it all. I remember after several years of being a Christian and studying so much, I absorbed so much information in my first several years of Christianity, and I really thought that I just had such a huge handle on everything that Christianity had. And as an apologist, I started meeting other groups of apologists and fell into a group of apologists who are very scholarly. And as I'd listen to them communicate, whether email or I'd meet with them or whatever the case was, they were talking about things that were so far beyond my scope of knowledge. They were asking questions that I don't even know the words that they're using. I don't even know how to get into this conversation because it's so far beyond me. Oh, I thought that I had a lot of knowledge, but what I learned, I barely know anything about the history of the church and all of the different doctrines that have been explored, and there's so much to know. Why do we get to a place where we think, well, I've arrived and I know it all? And teenagers can really struggle with this. Teenagers can get to that point where they think they know it all. Mom and Dad's an idiot, and I can tell them better. We need to challenge that. When your kid starts acting like that, create a little exam for them. An exam that they can take at your house. Sit down and say, take this exam. Let's see how much you really know. On there, you can have essays like explain in summary form Einstein's theory of relativity, and go on, to just give them some questions of things that they clearly won't know a thing about. Let them learn through that failure that they're not that smart. They might be really bright for the knowledge that they do have, but help them to understand that there's so much knowledge beyond what they've even studied. We need to help our kids understand that they don't know it all. But I don't want to bust their bubble, you know. Yeah, you need to bust their bubble. We need to help our kids be humble enough to continue to be teachable. If you let them go on thinking that they know it all, then really they just become dumber and dumber because they continue to not grow. The smartest decision I ever made was the day I discovered that I was an idiot. I decided one day, I don't know. I hardly know anything. And it caused me to want to continue to learn. We need to show our kids that being teachable is important. And the best way that we can do this is to model being teachable. One reason why kids begin to think that they know it all is simply because we refuse to learn from them. Understand that kids come home learning things that either, A, we've forgotten about or things that we didn't know. There are kids today who could tear a computer apart and build it back together, install software and download all kinds of songs and information, and you're sitting there going, what's a computer? You know, what's an iPod? I don't know. And they come home with this information, they try to share it with you. And if you're too proud and you're unteachable, you'll shut them down. And you won't be able to receive from your kids. It's okay to learn from your kids. It's okay when kids come home with knowledge that you didn't have. Allow them to teach you. And when you allow them to teach you, you model being teachable. You show them that mommy and daddy don't have all the information. That's okay. You're modeling teachability. Being teachable means that we can learn from anybody at any time. And I do. I'll go and do a youth retreat. I just did one in Corpus not too long ago. And my job was to teach the kids, but you know, all the adults then during meal times go and hang out, you know, with adults. And I go sit with the kids, man, and I'm listening to them. I'm learning all kinds of stuff. I love learning from anybody at any time. I want to be teachable. And so we can model teachability as well. But ultimately, whatever it is, we need to lead by example, because this is the key to raising committed kids. Kids who are committed to Christ. And kids who are committed to Christ have been taught how to be knowledgeable and charitable, dependable and teachable. And the best way to do this is to lead by example. And so you yourself, be knowledgeable. Know what you believe and why you believe it. Know what the heresies are and how to defend your faith against them. And then share that with your kids. Be charitable. Model sacrificial love. This will do more to help develop your child's charitability than any lesson you could ever teach them. Be dependable. Don't say one thing and mean another. Say what you mean and mean what you say. And apologize when you blow it. Show them that it's important even for you to be dependable. And be teachable. Even allow your kids to teach you. But let me end with this. It takes a community to raise kids right. And that statement carries with it two truths. The statement that it takes a community to raise kids right carries with it two concepts that are true. Number one, it means that there are a community of people here that need to commit themselves to raising the kids of the community. And number two, it means that you, the parents, are committed to the community for you and your kids to come and be a part of that. If the community's here and you're not, then you're not taking part in the community. And if the community's here but they're not committed to each other, then it's not really a community at all. We ought to take an interest in each other's kids. One of the ways that I know we can do this is by being involved in our children's ministry program. Whether it's by praying for teachers or praying for kids, or whether it's by signing up and going and teaching or being an assistant to a teacher, we ought to be committed to raising up Christian kids here. Maybe it's by getting involved with the youth ministry or the high school ministry that we plan to start in the future. It helps when our kids are hearing the same things that we say through someone else's mouth, doesn't it? Kids get to the point where they've heard it. Mom has said this and Dad has said this and we've heard it. But they meet some other Christian, some older guy or some older gal at the church, and they think that they're pretty cool. And when that older guy or that older gal at the church is saying the same things that Mom and Dad are saying, doesn't that help Mom and Dad? Doesn't that justify and back up what Mom and Dad have been saying all along? Now they're just hearing it through someone else that they think is kind of cool. That is a benefit. And that's why a community really needs to come together to help raise kids. The second thing that this suggests, that, like I said, is that we're attending church with our kids. If it takes a community to raise kids committed to Christ, then we need to be part of that community. Barna Research points this out, that 13 million Americans identified as being born again have been unchurched for 6 month periods at a time. 13 million Americans identified as being born again were unchurched, not having attended a Christian church service other than for a holiday at any time in the past 6 months. 6 months is too long to not be in church. It's no wonder why so many college students drop out of regular church attendance. If we want our kids to be committed to Christ, we must model what this commitment looks like. We must model it. If we're committed to the church, it doesn't guarantee that our kids are going to stay in church, but at least they saw the model. If we aren't committed to the church, why should we expect our kids to be? If we weren't committed, when our kids move away and they're off at college and they stop going to church, what do you tell them? You ought to go to church. And they can turn around and say, well, you ought to go to church. If we aren't committed to Christian fellowship, why do we get upset when our kids aren't committed to Christian fellowship? Why are we upset if they would rather go hang out with lost friends who aren't doing the things that our kids should be doing? And you might say to them, why don't you hang out with the Christian kids? And they might turn around and say to you, why don't you hang out with the Christian adults? If we aren't committed to God's Word, why should we expect our kids to be interested in God's Word? If we aren't committed to a devotional life, why should we expect our kids to be devotional? No, we must model first and show them by our example what it means to live a committed Christian life. I'll say this, parents, that I hope it doesn't sound like I'm coming down on parents, because life is busy and it flies by so fast. And we can get lost in a list of priorities that haven't been adjusted and corrected. And next thing you know, it's too late. And so here's my challenge. My challenge to you is just to sit down, even today, as a family, and write down what are our priorities. Because Jesus didn't cry out and say, let all your employers come unto me. Let your oversized house come unto me. He didn't say, let your 401k plan come unto me. He didn't say, let your SUV come to me. But your children. He said, let your children come unto me. And you are the representation of Christ for your child. You are the one who's supposed to model Christ for your children. Let's model them right so that we can raise kids who fall in love with Jesus through our example. If we want our kids to be committed to Christ, we must be parents who are committed to Christ. If we want to see the kids in this church become the future of this church, then we as a church, the grandparents, the parents, the family, the friends, we must be committed to each other, committed to Christ, so that we as a community can raise kids committed to Christ. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for this challenging study.